Blog Talk Radio.
Friends, and welcome to The World Transformed. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At The World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I'm super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
Man, I'm doing great. Got to Friday, so, you know.
We got to Friday. We've done another three-show week. We're back on three shows a week. So, you know, at this rate, we're just about a month away from our 500th podcast. I don't know if you've been keeping count there on the counter. But that's where we are now. We're
is this 500 according to Blog Talk Radio, or is 500 plus the shows we did previous to Blog Talk Radio?
This is, I believe what I finally settled on was, since we don't have a record of those earlier shows necessarily, we're counting only the Blog Talk Radio shows, but it will be our 500th official Blog Talk Radio podcast coming up.
Okay.
And we're closing
in on 200. I suspect we probably had
World
50 shows prior to that. We may have had 50 shows prior to Blog Talk Radio, but hey, you know, that's fine.
My estimate has always been 25, but I like the way you think. I like where you're going with that. Well, we've got a serious topic to discuss tonight, and I think that before we start talking about RoboCops and RoboDrivers, I think it's appropriate to mention that this topic has been brought to the fore by the just tragic, horrible events in Dallas last week. And we, talk carefully around these kinds of subjects. Obviously, there's no words to describe how bad it is when five police officers are murdered, when five people are murdered like that. That's an incalculable tragedy. But it speaks to issues that we talk about on the show, and I think it's appropriate that we mention it. Certainly our thoughts and prayers go out to the families of those who have lost lives, and, you know, really just our thoughts go out to our country as it deals with this kind of seemingly...
And to those that are trying to get back on their feet, the injured police officers
absolutely.
As well, of course.
Absolutely. But let's talk about this, because we've had two stories that have spoken to this idea of deadly robots here in the last couple of weeks, and one that I knew we were going to have to talk about anyway was this deadly Tesla crash. And interesting story in the Scientific American talking about how this crash exposes confusion over automated driving. There's also an interesting story on Forbes, I didn't link it here, that talks about what this does, the position this puts Tesla in potentially financially, in terms of when they should have reported that story and what that's going to do with their market valuation and some of these other kinds of issues. But let me give it to you, Stephen, because you're a big proponent of the notion of self-driving cars, right? Well, now what
Absolutely.
Do you have to say? Somebody's dead, okay? So the idea is bankrupt, and it's got to go away, right?
Not at all. Time to push down on the accelerator on this, because, Phil, I mean, at the height of deaths in the United States due to car crashes, it was about 50,000 a
right.
year. That was at the worst. It's currently at about 30,000, I believe, a year. It's quite a bit of improvement, actually.
Cars are safer.
They and you know, just more crash worthy than they used to be. And you know, we don't have, you know, ridiculous things like two-lane highways that with 75 mile per hour speed limits, like,
right,
you know,
right,
we used to have in the 70s and things like that. So so things are a little safer, but still 30,000 deaths due to humans. Obviously, what we got to do, Phil, is to push forward with this technology, because, you know, and you are going to see people die as a result of the of using, you know, auto drive cars. But it's the idea, obviously, is to see fewer deaths. You know, so I mean, does anybody think that because we've taken deaths from 50,000 a year to 30,000 a year with improved cars and crash testing and things like that, that we, you know, since we're still got cars that are killing 30,000 a year, that perhaps it was a waste of time to make our cars safer, you know, because 30,000 people are still dying. No, it was not a waste of time at all. We're saving 20,000 people a year. And not just the deaths, but also people that were not hurt as bad as they would have been otherwise, right? So
there is a very grim calculus that you can do.
Right.
If you talk about the improvements that were made in cars over the last few decades, every one of those improvements to the safety of cars rests on a pile of dead bodies. Every one of them does. Every one of those was in response to saying, hey, you know what, this could be better. People are dying because of this. And you know what? We did not have an immediate feedback loop at that time. So 100, 1,000, 10,000 people might have died from a particular feature or a particular flaw before anything was done about it. What we have with autonomous vehicles is we have complete telemetry. We have complete understanding of the issue every single time this happens, and we know exactly what the issue is. When you look at this,
we know what happened in this particular crash.
Right. And we will every time.
The auto drive failed to see a brightly lit, or excuse me, a white colored 18-wheeler tractor trailer that pulled out in front of this car. It was a white colored tractor trailer against a brightly colored sky.
Right.
And
right.
The autopilot failed to distinguish that and therefore didn't apply the brakes. So, and here's the thing. The engineers go back to the drawing board, they correct that, and every autopilot in the world will no longer make that mistake. It's not like we're teaching all the cars in the world to drive individually. We're teaching one AI basically to drive, and it'll drive safer than everybody. Right? I mean, that's the hope, anyway.
And I can hear the objection to that, and the objection is, oh, well, so somebody has to die every time they make an improvement. Well, no. They've made a lot of them without anybody ever dying. But
this is the first person to die, and we are a heck of a long way away from where we were 10 years ago.
Right.
So,
but the point is, every time something bad happens, that learning will be incorporated into the system, which is not what works, not the way it works today, right? The way it works today is, It could take hundreds of them before anything is even done. There are things they've never fixed that have killed people.
Yeah. If my neighbor, you know, three blocks down, pulls out in front of somebody and narrowly avoids having a fatal accident, and it scares the crap out of him, right?
Mm-hmm.
He might be a better driver after that. But will I be a better driver?
Right.
Even if I hear about it? No. You know? It's not the same with AI.
That's right.
And so
that's right. You improve one, potentially you've improved them all. You've improved the whole fleet of cars out there. That's a really good way of describing it, Stephen. Lesson learned by one driver is a lesson learned by one driver, but a lesson learned by a self-driving car is a lesson learned essentially by all self-driving cars, isn't it?
Right. So these things are going to get better and better. The truth of the matter is, we humans are just not great at driving. You know, we're just not. We're too easily distracted. We tend to get intoxicated. We tend to get emotional. We tend to have our minds on other things that we need to not be thinking about while we're trying to drive. And also we have two eyes that look in only one direction. And AI can overcome all of this.
And I think it's important to point out that the Tesla autopilot is not being sold as a completely autonomous driving system.
That's true. This particular vehicle is you're still the driver, and
right.
You're still responsible for what goes on, and you just kind of monitor the vehicle.
And in fact, the National Highway Transportation National Highway Traffic Safety Administration report officially says neither the autopilot nor the nor the driver noticed the white side of the tractor trailer against a brightly lit sky. Now, we have no idea what the driver was doing, but it's possible the driver was taking more advantage of autopilot than he was supposed to, right?
He could have been playing on his iPad. We don't know.
We don't know. And we certainly don't want to put any blame on the driver because we don't know. But but the point is, if he was doing what he was supposed to do, then he missed it too. Okay, so this is, you know, the point is that people also make mistakes and have accidents, as you know so well, as you're, the point that you're making. But they had to come up with a whole new kind of horrible mistake to make in order for this situation even to occur. And I think you're right. I think we're gonna, if anything, accelerate towards this because for every unfortunate, tragic thing that happens, there's a dozen or a hundred that are going to be averted from autonomous vehicles. Now, let's talk about something else people aren't very good at. People are not very good at managing life or death situations where there's firearms involved. What we are good at is killing people in those situations and getting killed in those situations. We talked about what occurred in Dallas last week, but what's gotten a lot of people's attention is the fact that the Dallas police used a bomb robot to kill the shooting suspect. And this is a change. This is a change for police work inside the U.S.
It's the very first time that this has been done, we believe.
Yeah, I think it probably is.
And here's my thought on it, Phil. I think that it was the right call under these circumstances. They'd already lost five police officers. Other officers were down. This guy apparently was nowhere close to running out of ammunition or the desire to kill people. He was a dead ender. And they had tried to negotiate with him, and that had broken down, and he started shooting again. At that point, what they did was they put a bomb on a bomb-detecting robot and sent that bomb-detecting robot in and detonated the bomb and blew the guy up. And I think, number one, it was the right call. But I think, number two, if this were not controversial, if no one had a problem with this, I'd be very concerned. It's one of those things, the implications of it are huge, isn't it?
Absolutely. Well, and I'm to the point where I'm not sure I can say it was the right call. I'm sufficiently disturbed by this that I'm not sure it was the right call. Definitely to stop the shooter was right. So I can't disagree with that. To your point, the problem with this is not something we want to get comfortable with.
No, I don't think we ever want to get comfortable with, civilian police departments confronting a civilian criminal and using deadly force by way of a robot. I don't think we ever need to get comfortable with that. It always needs to be a tough call. It needs to be a tough call every time.
We have a problem in this country, I think it's safe to say, without saying too much, we have a problem with the use of lethal force by police in this country as it is. In terms of it isn't always viewed as being used appropriately. Probably it is most of the time, but there are definitely cases where you look back over and you say, maybe no one had to die in that situation. And to make the delivery of lethal force one step removed, that much, in a sense, easier to do is a dangerous direction to go when we're already not sure if we're always using lethal force correctly. And I'm going to say that, and I've made this point a few times in the past, that really it's time for a new paradigm in policing. And in some ways, it's going back to an older paradigm of policing. We've watched so many cop shows, and we've lived in the reality that we live in for so long. We take it as a given that cops kill people, right? That part of
right.
police function is to kill people. Well, actually, it's not. Police aren't really there to kill anybody, right? That's not why we have police. It's not to kill people.
Right.
We have police to, you know, to apprehend criminals and to protect public safety and to stop bad situations from happening. Now, the way you do that a lot of times is you shoot somebody. I mean, that's that is the effective
way. Well, I mean, there are a lot of police officers that get through an entire career without drawing their gun.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And and congratulations to them for
yes.
that. Obviously if the future, a future that I would prefer, Bill, it would be a future that non-lethal weapons became as efficient as, as a police issue firearm in stopping bad situations. If you could pull out something that it could shoot as fast and as effectively, non-lethal, and stop things in a non-lethal fashion as effectively as the police sidearm, then that's what we'd want to do, right?
Oh, I think so, and I think it can happen. Probably if you take the enforcement function out of human hands. So I'm not opposed to using robots. I'm opposed to deadly robots, right? I think if we're ever going to implement non-lethal methods of enforcement, the robots are a great way to do it, because you can make a robot completely bulletproof. You can make a robot completely bombproof. And
you can make a robot that's expendable. People are not expendable. You could send a robot into a terrible situation, say his chances of making it out of there, the chances of that robot making it out are 1 in 10, and you don't care. It's just money,
Right.
Provided it's not a sentient AI, correct? So you wouldn't have to worry about something like that. And you could send the robot in to deal non-lethal stopping power to a bad situation, and you wouldn't care if its chances of coming out of it are good or not. Right.
Yeah, I think the point is you can design a robot. It's very close to the self-driving car argument when you think about it. You can design a robot that just goes in and takes weapons away from people. Right. That's what it's good at. Right. You look at the situation in St. Paul. Right. If instead of a nervous police officer, having this tense confrontation with somebody. If the whole exchange was the guy says I've got a concealed carry permit and I've got my weapon with me or whatever it was the guy said, at that point it's like, okay, well, we're going to activate the protocol now. Here comes the robot, right? My robot's going to come take your gun away from you, and then we're going to proceed from there. The robot can watch somebody. It can spot the difference better than a human between going for your gun and going for a wallet. It doesn't care if you go for the gun because you can shoot it and it doesn't hurt the rope. You know what I'm saying? It's like the whole dynamic is different, right? Because there's no I've got to prevent this person from killing me thing going on either side, right?
Right.
Assuming goodwill.
Well, when a police officer fires his weapon, he's obviously concerned about human life. And
right.
one of the humans that he's concerned about is himself, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
And that as it should be. If we got RoboCop in a sense out there, then it does not need to be concerned with that. And
all it does is it takes weapons out of people's hands, whether they're offering up freely or not, and maybe has a taser built in case they're getting really unruly, right? And then
right.
once the situation's clear, then the regular cops move in and nobody has to get shot because everything's safe. I don't know why that's not our model for going forward with police robots, right? It seems to me that would solve an awful lot of problems.
I think the technology is not quite there, Phil, is not quite mainstream enough where people are, local police officer, police departments are really considering that just yet. But, give it another 5 years or so.
Well, yeah, I think what I'm saying is between now and the 5 years, that's the optimum we want to design to, right? We certainly don't want to design to, hey, we got a new great way to deliver lethal force, right? Because robots will be really good at that if we use them for that. And that's just a scary set of possibilities for so many reasons, as we've mentioned. But I think that we can make good use of robots to just totally diffuse the whole situation, to make something that is inherently unsafe, just in the same way we can turn driving, which is an inherently unsafe operation, into something much safer through automation. We can turn, you know, confrontations between police and armed or potentially armed people into much, much safer encounters through automation. And that is the design optimum that I would argue we need to go for. I think the whole landscape of what we're dealing with in this country right now would be dramatically shifted if that became the norm. And, you know, I think we'll have the technology in a few years to make that the norm. The question is, will people think of that, right? Will that be in the mind space of police departments and the government and the people building the robots to move in that direction? That's the direction
I think it will. I have faith that that's exactly how it'll go down.
Yeah.
And I hope I'm right in that.
Well, I hope you are too, because that's definitely the direction we want to move. And, you know, having covered these two serious topics, Stephen, why don't we just spend a few minutes and shake the week off? And I don't know about you, but I'm ready for
do something a little more fun, a little light,
I'm ready for a good geek out. And I don't know if you saw this video that I posted on Facebook, Dinosaur Corn on the Cob Holders. But
I loved it. Describe,
you know,
it for
finally,
the audience. It's pretty great.
If you're skeptical about the whole maker movement, okay, I want you to watch this video, because here's the thing. Someone has figured out a way to turn toy dinosaurs into dinosaur corn on the cob holders. And it's a pretty simple, straightforward set of, you know, all you need is a vise, you need a knife, you need some food-safe silicon plastic glue. And, well, I mean, the results speak for itself. I can tell you that I've seen a lot of these videos on Facebook and never said, well, I'm doing that, but this one I'm doing. Okay.
You gotta post pictures when you get that done. That would be great. Now, of course, once it's done, it's no longer a kid's toy. I mean, it could be potentially dangerous. The lawyer in me is compelled to say.
Thank you for pointing that out. Yes, I think.
You know, you put them up and you put them in the corn on the cob and hand it to your kids at that point. But other than that, they stay out of the reach of small children.
The trick is, we'll keep them with the kitchen stuff, and I won't use any of their existing toy dinosaurs, because that would be confusing.
There you go.
Yeah, that
buy a new toy dinosaur and saw it in half and get to work on that. That was pretty cool. I liked it.
I'm going to. I just love what that says about, you know, how we can customize and personalize our world. You know, why should my corn on the cob holders look like little corn cobs? You know, they could
it could be something else.
Yeah, and
I say, Phil, find you a toy dachshund. And
that would work too. That would be
awesome.
Like Slinky Dog.
You saw that toy
dachshund
in half, and it makes an extra long dachshund that you're eating while you're eating a corn on the cob. To me, that would be hilarious. So
that's the way to go. How about you, Stephen? Any other geek to share with us this week?
Yeah. My family decided that it would be a nice thing for Dad to create a board game room in our house. And they decided that, hey, let's kind of make that a Father's Day thing. And so we took a spare bedroom and got to work on it. So obviously a huge Father's Day present. It's probably about five Father's Days rolled into one, right? Pulled the carpet out of it, putting down wood flooring and repainted and bringing in a new game table and putting all the game shelves that were kind of scattered throughout our living area, putting them together against one wall. So I had like a wall of games to look at with the kids. And we're having a good time with this project, working together as a family to make this happen. And it's spilled over now into the rest of the house. So this has turned into a rather thorough renovation for our entire house. Once you get one room looking great, you know, obviously the rest of the house looks poor by comparison. So you have to keep rolling.
Keep raising the bar. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, what started as a Father's Day gift is turning into, a gift for everybody throughout the entire house. So we're
a full house
flooring and painting and everything else. So
But you know what's interesting is there's actually a little bit of similarity between these two. You know, mine at a very humble level, talking about, you know, why should my environment include something other than something totally geeky? And here you are taking your environment and catching it up with your geek lifestyle, right? It's like
exactly. So this is not just for dad. This, you know, we'll have board games on one wall, but the other wall will be video games that the kids love. And and I have an old arcade cabinet that I built back 10 years ago. Phil, that was a geek project I was working on a decade ago. I built an arcade cabinet just like you'd find in the arcades. And from bottom up, and it was just sitting empty for a long time. And now the kids, Timothy and Matthew primarily, are you know, bringing it up, you know, to date and everything, putting in a flat screen monitor in the front and redoing the sound and everything like that so it could be played properly. And I don't know if you are aware of a multiple arcade machine emulator program. It's called MAME, and MAME is basically a platform for launching the code of these old arcade cabinets. Okay, and you use the actual
Asteroids,
code.
You can play Defender. You can play Pac-Man. You can Space Invaders.
Yeah, and you use the actual code from those old arcade games, and MAME runs it. And so it's not just one arcade game that you have this huge cabinet for. It's all of them, you know, to some extent.
And let me give you a bonus you haven't even thought of, Stephen. Okay, you guys can take a trip to Hawaii on all those quarters. Okay, that's what I'm saying.
Right. All those
quarters are going to be pumping into that thing. I guess you probably don't have to have any quarters. I'm just kidding.
Well, you know what's funny is that you do have to push a button. I mean, since you're using the code from the old arcade games, you do have to tell it that it just got a coin in some way or another.
Well, there you
and
go.
So we got a coin button for that arcade cabinet. So.
Awesome. Well, that sounds great. Stephen, keep us posted on that. We want to hear more.
Yeah, I'll publish some pictures sometime. We can add that to the show notes when we're done. Future geek show.
Like to see the finished environment, and you know, your evolution towards the full geek life is one that we look forward to tracking. Well, it's been a great week. Enjoyed talking with you this week. Thank you all for being with us. We're going to be back again next week with three brand new shows. And until next time, live to see it.